Okay, so today we're diving into a case that really, it shines a light on just how tough it can be for people in prison to navigate the legal system when it comes to civil rights.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about Dennis Barger v. Craig White, a 2019 decision out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Wait.
And this case, honestly, it's like a masterclass in how the Eighth Amendment and the PLRA, the Prison Litigation Reform Act, actually work in practice, especially for anyone interested in prison litigation.
Yeah, and it really highlights those hurdles that inmates face when they try to, actually get their claims heard in court. It's not just about what happened to them, but it's about all these procedural rules they have to follow. It's fascinating and kind of frustrating too.
So in Barger v. White, you've got Dennis Barger, the inmate, who claims a correctional officer, this guy, Craig White, basically ignored a serious risk to his safety, and that led to him getting attacked.
Exactly. And this is at Elaine Hunt Correctional Center down in Louisiana.
Oh, right, in Louisiana. And the case really boils down to two big questions. Did Barger file his lawsuit on time, and did he follow all the steps he was supposed to within the prison's grievance system before going to court?
Yeah, and that's what makes it so important for law students listening. You learn about these big concepts like the Eighth Amendment and the PLRA, but this case shows you how they actually play out.
Absolutely. It's a real-world example of how those principles can really impact someone's life. So let's jump into the details a bit. What exactly happened back in April 2015?
So the core of Barger's claim is that he was attacked by another inmate back in April 2015. And he argues that Officer White didn't just, make a mistake or something. He's saying White knew about potential threats to him and basically allowed the attack to happen.
Like he turned a blind eye.
Yeah,
I don't know.
exactly. And legally speaking, this is what's called deliberate indifference.
And that's a very specific legal standard. We'll get into that a bit more later. But first, let's talk about what Barger did after the attack.
Sure. So he files what's called a Section 1983 lawsuit. And this is basically the legal tool that allows people to sue government officials for violating their constitutional rights.
So Barger is saying that Officer White's inaction violated his Eighth Amendment rights because it amounted to cruel and unusual punishment by ignoring that risk to his safety.
Exactly. But as we said before, it's not as simple as just filing a lawsuit. There are all these procedural hoops you got to jump through, and that's where things get tricky for Barger.
So what happened at the district court level?
Well, the district court ended up dismissing Barger's case, and they did it for two reasons. First, they said he filed the lawsuit too late.
The statute of limitations.
Exactly. And second, they said he didn't properly exhaust all of his options within the prison system itself before going to federal court.
So that's that PLRA exhaustion requirement we talked about.
Right. And this is like a double whammy for a lot of inmates. They're dealing with this really difficult situation inside prison, and then they have to navigate all these complex legal procedures just to get their foot in the door of the courthouse.
It's a lot to ask. It's like adding insult to injury,
Absolutely. And that's why this case is so important to understand, because these procedural issues come up all the time in prison litigation.
So let's unpack some of these legal concepts, starting with that Eighth Amendment standard of deliberate indifference. We hear that phrase thrown around a lot, but what does it actually mean?
Okay, so the gold standard here comes from a Supreme Court case called Farmer v. Brennan. And it basically says that for an inmate to prove deliberate indifference, they have to show that a prison official was aware of a substantial risk of serious harm to them. And that's not just like a hunch or a general feeling. It has to be actual knowledge of a real danger. And then the official has to consciously disregard that risk, like they know about the danger, but they choose to ignore it. It's not just negligence. It's more like a deliberate choice to not do anything.
So it's a really high bar to clear. You can't just say the officer should have known or that they messed up. You have to show they knew and they deliberately didn't act.
And that's one of the things the Fifth Circuit focused on when they reviewed Barger's case. They agreed with the district court that Barger didn't provide enough evidence to show that Officer White actually knew about a specific threat that led to the attack.
So even if White knew there was generally some tension or potential for violence in the prison that wasn't enough, Barger had to show he knew about a specific threat to Barger himself.
That's exactly right. It has to be specific to the inmate and the situation at hand.
Okay, so that's deliberate indifference. Now let's talk about the first procedural hurdle Barger faced, the statute of limitations.
So in Louisiana, where this all happened, Section 1983 claims have a 1 year statute of limitations.
One year.
Yeah, meaning you have 1 year from the date of the alleged violation to file your lawsuit.
If you miss that deadline, you're out of luck.
Generally, yes. But there are exceptions, and that's where things get interesting with Barger's case.
Okay, tell me more.
So Barger argues that when he filed what's called an administrative remedy procedure, or ARP, back in June 2015, that should have paused the clock on that one-year limitation period.
Okay, so an ARP, that's basically the prison's internal grievance system, right?
Exactly. It's like the official way for inmates to complain about conditions inside the prison.
Yeah.
So Barger's saying by filing that ARP, he was actively trying to resolve the issue. And that should have stopped the clock on that one-year deadline.
Interesting. So if filing that complaint did act like a pause button on the legal timeline, it could mean his lawsuit was filed within the one-year window, even though it came later.
Exactly.
But I remember you saying there was some dispute over whether he even filed that ARP in the first place.
There was. And this is where things get a little messy. Barger claims he filed the ARP in June 2015, but never got a response back from the prison. But the defense, they basically questioned whether the complaint was ever submitted.
Like they were saying maybe he just never actually filed it.
Yeah,
exactly. And this becomes a crucial point in the appeal because the Fifth Circuit says, hold on here. The district court made a mistake. They didn't properly consider all of the evidence.
Really?
Yeah. They said that Barger's sworn statement saying that he did file the ARP along with a copy of the ARP that was postmarked and sent to his attorney created what's called a genuine dispute of material fact.
Okay, break that down for me. What does genuine dispute of material fact actually mean?
Basically, it means that there's a real question about a key fact in the case, and that question needs to be decided before the case can move forward.
Okay.
And in this situation, the question is, did Barger file the ARP or not? And the Fifth Circuit's saying, look, we've got his sworn statements, and we've got this postmarked copy that seems to back up his claim. So we can't just dismiss his case without figuring out if he actually filed the complaint.
Right, because if he did file it and what paused the clock, then his lawsuit might be timely after all.
Exactly. And the court makes an important point here. They say, and I'm quoting, simply being self-serving, however, does not prevent a party's assertions from creating a dispute of fact.
Meaning, just because it's in Barger's best interest to say he filed the complaint doesn't automatically mean the court can ignore his evidence.
Right. It means you can't just dismiss someone's claims out of hand just because they benefit from those claims. You got to look at the evidence and see if there's a real dispute that needs to be resolved.
That makes sense. So the Fifth Circuit is saying the district court shouldn't have thrown out the case based on the statute of limitations alone because there's this unresolved question about the ARP.
Exactly.
But that's just one part of the puzzle, right? There's still the issue of the PLRA and the exhaustion requirement.
Right, and that's the second big procedural hurdle Barger faces.
So remind us again, what does the PLRA actually require inmates to do before they can go to federal court with their claims?
The PLRA says that inmates have to completely exhaust all the steps in the prison's internal grievance process before they can file a lawsuit in federal court. And that means following every single level of appeal or review that the prison offers. They can't just start the process and then run to court if they don't like the outcome or if they don't hear back right away.
It's like I have to go through all the proper channels within the prison system first.
Exactly. And it's a really strict requirement. The idea behind it is to give prisons a chance to address complaints internally and hopefully resolve issues without having to go to court.
I can see the logic there, but it also seems like it could create a lot of delays and roadblocks for inmates who are trying to get justice.
It definitely can.
Yeah.
And that's one of the criticisms of the PLRA. But it's the law, and the courts enforce it very strictly.
So what happened with Barger? Did he follow all the steps?
Well, this is where things get even more complicated.
Okay.
So remember, he claimed he filed that initial ARP complaint, but never got a response.
Yeah.
But he also admitted that he didn't go on to the second step of the grievance process.
So even though he says he filed the first complaint, he didn't appeal or follow up when he didn't hear back.
Right. And the Fifth Circuit ultimately agrees with the district court on this point. They say that even though Barger claims he filed the initial ARP, he failed to exhaust all of his administrative remedies under the PLRA because he didn't take that next step.
Wow. So even if the prison dropped the ball and didn't respond to his complaint, it was still his responsibility to keep pushing the process forward.
Exactly. And that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of inmates. You know, they're in this system where they often feel powerless, and then they're told they have to perfectly navigate this complex grievance process, even when the prison itself might not be following the rules.
It doesn't seem very fair.
It's definitely a point of contention, but that's the way the PLRA is currently interpreted and enforced.
So the Fifth Circuit upholds the dismissal of Barger's case because he didn't exhaust those remedies. But I remember you mentioning that there's a really important distinction in how they dismissed it.
Yes, this is crucial. They say that the dismissal for failure to exhaust should have been without prejudice.
Okay, so what's the difference between a dismissal with prejudice and without prejudice?
So huge difference. A dismissal with prejudice is like a final decision. It means the case is closed and you can't bring that same claim again. But a dismissal without prejudice means the case was dismissed for a technical reason, like in this case, not exhausting those grievance procedures.
Okay.
But it leaves the door open for the plaintiff to refile the claim if they can fix that technical issue.
So it's like a second chance.
Exactly. It's like the court saying you messed up the procedure this time, but if you do it right, you can try again.
I see. And why was a dismissal without prejudice the right call in Barker's case?
It all boils down to his situation at the time of the appeal. By then, he had been released from prison.
Oh, interesting. So he's not in prison anymore.
Right. And the Fifth Circuit says that because he's no longer incarcerated, he doesn't have to follow the PLRA's exhaustion requirements anymore for a new lawsuit about this same incident.
That makes sense, because the whole point of the PLRA is to make sure inmates use the prison's internal grievance system before going to federal court. But once he's out, he's not bound by that system anymore.
Exactly. And the court specifically says, and this is another important quote, failure to exhaust, however, warrants dismissal without prejudice, which permits the litigant to refile if he exhausts or is otherwise no longer barred by the PLRA requirements.
So even though Barker messed up the process while he was in prison, his release kind of resets things and gives him a potential path to refile his claim.
Precisely. It's like a loophole opened up for him because of his change in circumstances.
That's a pretty big deal. So what are the big takeaways from all of this for law students who might be interested in prison litigation?
Okay, so first off, this case really highlights just how high that bar is for proving deliberate indifference under the Eighth Amendment.
Yeah, you really got to have the evidence to show that the official knew about a specific risk and consciously ignored it.
Exactly. And second, the PLRA's exhaustion requirement is no joke.
Yeah.
The courts take it super seriously, and they enforce it strictly, even if the prison isn't holding up their end of the bargain, by responding to grievances promptly.
And that leads to the third point, which is that inmates have to be incredibly careful and meticulous about following every single step in the grievance process, no matter how frustrating it gets.
Yes.
Okay. It's like one misstep can derail your whole case.
It can. And that's why it's so important for lawyers who work with incarcerated clients to really guide them through the process and make sure they don't make any procedural errors.
It's a huge responsibility. And there's another important point we can take away from this case about evidence.
Right.
You know, the Fifth Circuit emphasized that even if an inmate's statements are self-serving, meaning they benefit their own case, those statements can still create a genuine issue of material fact if they're backed up by evidence. Like in this case, Barker had those postmarked copies that supported his claim about filing the ARP.
Exactly. So it's not just about what the inmate says. It's also about the evidence they can bring to the table to support their claim.
Yeah. And lastly, I think this case really drives home the importance of understanding those legal terms like with prejudice and without prejudice.
Oh, yeah. Those are huge.
Because knowing the difference can have a major impact on your client's ability to pursue their claims in the future.
Absolutely. It can be the difference between a case being permanently closed and having the opportunity to try again.
So to sum it all up, Barker v. White is a reminder that navigating the legal system is hard enough as it is.
Yeah.
But for incarcerated individuals, it's even tougher because of all these extra layers of complexity.
And the PLRA, while it might have good intentions in theory, often ends up creating more obstacles for inmates who are trying to vindicate their rights.
Exactly. And that raises a really important question for our listeners.
Yeah. What do you think are the biggest challenges facing inmates who are trying to get justice for potential constitutional violations in prison?
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about these procedural hurdles, but what else makes it so difficult for them?
Definitely something for everyone to think about. And if you're interested in learning more about this area of law, Barker v. White is a great case to start with.
It really illustrates how those big legal concepts we learn in school actually play out in the real world, and how even seemingly small procedural details can have huge consequences for people's lives.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Barker v. White.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
Take care.